Welcome to Copcast, the podcast of YEP about personal growth and leadership. In every podcast, we will interview an inspiring guest about his or her experience and views in developing skills and capacities of young people. My guests will also give practical tips and recommendations in how to apply their lessons and insights into your daily work and life. YEP is the acronym of the Young Experts Program, a partnership of the Dutch Ministry of Foreign Affairs with the Netherlands Walter Partnership. My name is Paul van Koppen. I am trainer and coach at YEP and consultant in the international water sector. Today, my guest is Jeroen van der Somme, the director of ACFO. ACFO helps organizations to become data-driven. Jeroen mentions himself on LinkedIn as director of ACFO, with specialities in managing director, data journey, hydrogeologist, integrated water resources management, development corporation, water and sanitation, public-private partnerships, information technology, innovation, profit and non-profit. Wow, what a list. Welcome, Jeroen. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Paul. Wow, I think I need to update my LinkedIn profile because this is a bit too ambitious.
Yeah.
It's good to put it on my action list.
Yeah,
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure, Jeroen. Welcome. Could you tell us a bit more, please, first about your international career?
Oh, that's you do. let me try to keep it short.
Yeah.
At that time, when I was a student, hydrogeology in Amsterdam, we had a system that there was a professor who was part-time professor at the university, and at the same time, part-time, he worked for a consulting company, Iwako. You know very
yeah.
well. And the first step in my career was that I was invited to do my thesis in a developing country. In this case, it was Burkina Faso. And then when things go smooth, I stay there. And I moved from Burkina to Mozambique, and from Mozambique to Indonesia, etc. And all together, I stayed about 10 years abroad before returning home, marrying, having kids, and work in the Netherlands.
Okay, and you work now, I think, about 40, 45 years maybe in the international water sector, huh?
Yes.
But you've also been working in different kind of organizations. I think you worked for a private company, for network organization, Netherlands Water Partnership, and for ACFO, huh?
Yeah.
For NGO, yeah. Maybe a bit more about why did you change from these typical different organizations?
I think it was out of curiosity. And the need to have some change. But it was also quite inspiring in my time as a consultant with Iwako. Every 3-4 years, you had a moment of reflection to see, okay, is it still challenging enough? Is it, can I still develop myself enough?
Yeah.
And that was also the policy of that company. Every 3-4 years, you had a new challenge, a new country, a new subject. So I moved from different countries. And when I came back to the Netherlands, there the challenge was to work in nature conservation in Maastricht with the Grensmaas and the Zaltmaas, the flooding areas. And at a certain moment, there was a new development in the international water sector around the Global Water Partnership. It was the time that the Prince of Orange became active in water management. And around that developments, the Netherlands Water Partnership was developed, and they were looking for a director to set that up, and that's how I came there.
Yeah, okay.
And out of the Netherlands Water Partnership, we started a new innovative project with some tech people. I can tell you a bit more about that, and that became ACFO as an independent organization, where then I continue to work up till Today,
yeah. Well, we'll talk about ACFO a bit later, yeah, in more detail. I'm also interested to hear from you. How have you been working with young experts or young people in all those years? What is your experience there?
I was a student myself, and in that starting period in West Africa, we worked with a lot of young people. There were a lot of students. There was always a constant flow of young people getting in, starting with their study, finalizing the study with the thesis or something else. So that was quite common. And actually the same in Netherlands Water Partnership. We had a young team. And people could grow, and we did a lot of innovative things, and young people were open to that.
Yeah, and that's what you apparently liked. I see your smile now. Yeah, that's also my memory, that you always like to work with a lot of young people. Is that correct? Is that?
Yeah, not only. I mean, because you need the experience, and but to make that bridge, to make that connection between experience of the past and a new approach or a new open-minded setting. I remember often, I don't know who said it, but old people often approach young people by saying, yes, interesting, but. Or, oh, it's very interesting, but. Is that possible? But. And that but is just the thing young people don't have. And that makes it so interesting.
Okay, so it means you're also a bit more cautious about using the word but if you talk to young people.
I try to, but I realize also I'm using it still too often.
Yeah, okay. Now later maybe we come a bit more about this experience and maybe your ideas about working with young people. But I would like to maybe elaborate a bit more about our, let's say, experiences in general from this corona crisis. In the Netherlands, we've now been coping with it for 10 months almost. Recently, we had this stricter lockdown with a curfew in the Netherlands. But I'm just curious in general, do you have any reflections on how you endured during this corona crisis from a private perspective, personally, but also maybe from your work? Could you share a bit of your experiences or your lessons?
Yeah, I see, I observe two sides of it. If I look at ACFO, at my work, I never had so much contacts with all our local offices. You need to know that ACFO actually was a virtual organization. We have local hubs in Nairobi, in West Africa, in Indonesia, and Latin America. And, you know, when there was no COVID, I was always busy in workshops or meetings, etc. So it was quite difficult to schedule meetings. Now I'm instantly behind my computer and I can just chip in and say, okay, in 10 minutes, I have some time to you. So there is much more contact with our local staff. On the other hand, what I hugely miss, and it's not only me, is the inspiration of live contacts, like us sitting here. I mean, it's you cannot... you cannot compare that with the two-dimensional screens we are sitting on. And even more, I'm with my wife, Caroline, we both work, she upstairs, I downstairs, we have contact. But if you are sitting alone, or if you are in Bamako in the hot season
in Mali,
and you have a poor internet connection, it's really hard to be in a lockdown.
So you're saying there are positive elements and negative elements. And have you learned something or learned to cope with something specific that was surprising for yourself? Like you said, first of all, you had more contacts with all the local partners, local offices. Are there any other things, maybe on a personal level, that you have maybe experienced now?
What I most miss is the often it's boring, you know, where you get your inspiration from. But that differs from people to people. I mean, we have a lot of software developers who are used to this their whole life, you know, they're working from home and they do their coding. But I need more people around me to get inspired and get new ideas.
Yeah.
And add to new ideas of others.
Yeah, no, yeah, for me, very much the same. I recognize it very strongly, yeah.
Is, though, interesting for COVID, if you look at it a different picture, is the huge importance of data. Imagine, you cannot see the COVID. You can only count it, you know. And the importance of data and all the measures we take and the science-based decision-making, that really demonstrates the importance of data in a way we never thought it was so vividly as before.
Yeah, interesting, because that's a nice bridge maybe to the next topic I would like to discuss with you. I could now classify you, I could mention you now a kind of data-driven person, very much into data journeys, as it was in your LinkedIn profile. So let's maybe take a step back and first look at ACFO in general, because that is, I think, linked to your data journeys, working with ACFO. Many of our listeners, many of the Yappers may know that ACFO, of course, is a longtime partner of Yep. But maybe it's interesting to tell a bit more about, you know, the mission and the work of ACFO. Why was it established, actually?
That's interesting to go a bit back in time, because my root experience is as a hydrologist in Burkina Faso, digging wells, getting water in communities, etc., doing measurements, etc. And then after 10 years, when I was back, looking back on that time, I realized a lot of that knowledge and a lot of the data are gone. They are evaporized. Because in the development sector, and many people know, we think projects. You know, you have a funding for 3 years, you do your work and you're done, you write your report. And then often the knowledge, including the data, evaporates. Yeah. So I said, how is it possible? And that was 12 years ago when we started ACFO. How is that possible that we let it like that? You know, that we don't change that. And then I met Thomas Belkema, who was a startup IT guy coming from Silicon Valley back to Stockholm, where I met him. And he said, why you don't use the cloud? Why you don't use modern IT, etc.? And then we start a conversation, and out of that came ACFO. So it was, first of all, keeping a hydrological memory alive. That was first, and you were involved too, Paul, at the first discussions we had. And secondly, try to get professional IT knowledge into the development sector. Because like we see now with blockchain and other and new fancy things and drones, everyone jumps on the innovation. It's startups, it's new. But to really build something which is performant and can work globally, it's quite a hard thing. And you need investments and really knowledge. Yeah. That's how we started with ACFO.
Yeah, well, yeah, I remember this. I was also involved in the first years. But maybe it's good to explain what was the initial, let's say, intended impact of ACFO. What should ACFO bring in terms of the effects or doing better or more with the use of data?
The data part, surprisingly, came later.
Okay.
The first time was to bring professional software into the development sector.
But with what purpose, you mean them, yeah?
Because we saw a lot of one-time innovative projects that could not scale. And if you want to put software, then you need to build software that is robust, that's not free, that can scale. And that's what we did. Over time, we said, okay, we have, for example, nice water quality measurements with your smartphone or data collection with your smartphone. That's cool. And people start using it. But if you don't know how to use it or you don't know what data you actually want, it's useless.
Yeah.
So that's we came into what we call these days data journey. Support organizations with data to make better projects, to have higher impact, to make better decisions. And then you have not only data collection and IT tools, you have to think about theories of change, why you do it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I understand now. And those data journeys, this role of data, is it linked still to water where you came from? Huh? Or is it linked to any sector?
In fact, it's linked at any sector, but we focus on agriculture and water.
Okay, and could you give an example how data, for instance, could have a positive benefit or impact for agricultural food production?
Yes, there are many examples of that. One thing that we are doing often is the certification of how food is being grown. You know, you want to have a sustainable agriculture, but you need to monitoring how the whole process of the value chain is being carried out and whether it's acceptable or not.
Yeah. And data there is something that can help make those kind of certificates, you mean? Is that what is now happening?
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So my fair trade chocolate maybe linked to some data collection from ACFO.
Sure.
Yeah.
As an example. ACFO or someone else, you need data to certify that whole value scale.
Yeah. And in this role that ACFO takes in managing data and putting data to use for, let's say, for sustainable food change or water change, do you see a specific role for young people or young experts? Because that's what I also take as ACFO, as a breeding place for young people.
Yeah, we see that as a huge opportunity for young people here, but also young people there. We discussed earlier one of the programs that we are running, the Mali Data Initiative, because we see a world in which every community have professional data collectors, young people that know how to capture data through smartphones or sensors, etc., and that they can collect data on demand and make a living out of that. That's one thing.
Yeah.
And at the same time, these data belong to the community. They should not go to a foreign entity that use the data and they never even realize see the benefits of it. So these data depositories at community district level is something that we are setting up. And what you see everywhere where data are available, people are going to work with unexpected things with those data that you can't expect.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. So there will be data-centered services generated. There will be data products be generated.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, and you mentioned Mali as an example, for instance. What I really like is that when I talk about young experts, you directly associate this with young experts in Africa, I think, where your, well, a lot of your experience lies and your heart, I think, still lies. So very interesting to hear. So you're saying we can even create kind of new jobs or new applications of all those data. Eh? Could you give maybe an example of such an interesting or maybe innovative use of the data that you have been collecting?
Yes, there are a few, although we are still in the beginning. A good example is the mapping of water infrastructure in several countries in West Africa. Once you know what type of, for example, hand pumps there are in a certain area, and you know whether they are functional or not, and you know the characteristics of your wells, it is interesting for a private company to say, hey, with all these data, for me, it's interesting to make an offer to maintain these pumps. And if you don't know where these pumps are, and et cetera, you will never step into this. So we see that data will reduce the business development risks to an acceptable level. So there is much more activity. Other examples are road maintenance through satellite images calibrated with online in the field pictures of potholes, for example, can give you a clue which needs to plan your maintenance of roads.
Yeah, very
just
interesting.
To give a couple
of examples. Yeah. No, interesting. And later maybe we come about your views for the near future. Interesting. You also mentioned to me earlier when we spoke, I think, about a new kind of job. It's called data collector. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. You even link this to kind of economic development or job creation. Is that correct? Huh?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
We foresee at ACFO, we see a few, as just said, we foresee a future in which every community has professional data collectors. And if you need, for one reason or another, data for that, for a certain region, you can go through a platform online, get in contact with the local data collectors that can collect data for you, and you pay them through mobile money directly, and these data are being transferred to you.
Yeah, very, very
respecting all the GDPR privacy regulations, etc.
Yeah.
And an important thing is these data remain accessible for the community, because the big team today is data for development, which is crucial.
Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, very interesting. Later maybe we can have a bit more about this interesting topic. You also referenced to some projects in West Africa, huh? and young people there, huh? Being working with data. You've also been working, of course, with Dutch young people, Dutch Yappers, international Yappers. ACFO has been employing a lot of young people. Could you say a little bit about, you know, the differences or the similarities between those different backgrounds, you could say, eh? Culturally, eh? Or in terms of education? Is there any, let's say, important difference, or do you see it as a young group that in general, eh? For you as ACFO, eh? Is very important?
Yeah, actually, you should ask the youth themselves.
Yeah.
But what I see, I mean, just it seems maybe obvious, but youth in Africa is different than youth here.
Of course. So could you give an example?
A typical graduate in the Netherlands is maybe 25. Often, and you see that also in the YEP programs, people who step into YEP programs in Africa are typically 30 or even because their study is much longer, because they, you know, they're all the hurdles on the road to really complete your study. And it's not just a nomadic process like with us. So that's the difference.
Yeah. Is there any, let's say, difference in terms of the added value that they can bring?
Yeah, I mean, what is most interesting is that you can team youth, local youth with Dutch youth and vice versa. That's very interesting, so they can learn from each other. Because for the Dutch young people to get into the cultural difference and the cultural landscape, it's quite hard. It's part of, you know, your experience as a YEPer, how to cope with that.
Yeah. Okay.
And for the foreign YEPer, it's the same. And things about culture, hierarchy, how to open your mind or not, yeah. and your hesitations about that, you will know that from the YEP. But that makes it interesting.
If you would have to, let's say, define or describe, how do you see personal leadership or personal growth? How would you see it?
Oh, yeah, that's a hard one. I mean, we talk a lot of data, but I also work myself on intuition.
Intuition.
And I think to develop your intuition in your working environment, it's a thing. And intuition comes often also with trust. So one part of leadership is also, for me personally, giving trust and communicate in a way that you can build and develop trust in your team, with an individual, in with your partner who you work with.
So is that kind of leadership on a personal level, developing your trust or your ability to give trust to others?
Yes, I think for me that's key. And that fits to my own experience. I always had a good example of a leader of the company I used to work with. In many ways, he stood behind me. You know, go ahead. You can do it.
So he supported you.
He supported me. Okay, he gave the point on the horizon. He gave the direction. But then you could do it. And as far as you felt comfortable. So that led to two things. You can grow very rapidly. If you are in trouble and there is that trust, you go back and you say, please help me because this is too difficult. And that is a very efficient way for a company to get all out of the capacities you have there. And from the person in his own personal development.
Okay, interesting. So you were saying actually maybe we need to stimulate more this kind of younger and senior more people working together. One giving trust or supporting, and the other one developing, growing.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't have two static boundaries and mentorship and rules, you know, frameworks in which someone needs to operate.
Yeah. Okay. In terms of this trust building, being creative. Do you have any, let's say, specific lesson yourself? You know, you mentioned one of your former bosses, your managers.
Yeah.
Or would you have a specific recommendation for a young person now? Yeah? Maybe one of your kids or anyone else. How could you stimulate this more if you are a young person yourself?
Ah, that's a difficult one. Actually, I have two. One of it is... That is a saying my father had on his desk.
Yeah.
And it said, why make it difficult? With a little bit more effort, you can make it impossible.
Okay.
Yeah. And people often complicate things so that, you know, you can't do anything because it's too big.
So keep it simple or?
Keep it simple. And another one, and people who knows me, they recognize that is verzin a list. How you can explain that?
Be smart or find a trick. Yeah.
Find a trick. It's a famous saying in Dutch. Finally. Yeah. So if you don't know anymore where to go, okay, sit back, hold on, and out of the blue, find a new solution.
Okay. Yeah, nice suggestions. Thanks very much. Yeah. Do you see important IT trends, information technology trends, that will shape or influence the development and leadership of young people or the role of them in their work?
Yeah, if you ask me, then I would say it's all about data. And the tools, how to capture these data, how to work with these data, they are developing so fast. And it's mind blowing. I mean, from facial recognition to the way how human beings are exploited by the big tech companies to deliver data without them even knowing. So for me, key is in the future how we can master this huge availability of data and how you can bring that to the good.
Yeah, and young people, are they then more, let's say, equipped or more capable of using all those IT technologies? Is that their specific added value, that they are more easily working with all those new?
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, in that sense, I feel myself a digital illiterate compared to the young people, because it's then part of their nature. I mean, and you see it with kids, you see it everywhere, whether in Africa or in Asia or whatever. So that's, but what they should know is the world behind it. And what they should know is how people are misusing these data to manipulate the truth, the fact, etc. So directly, the importance of data is to get the facts right.
Yeah.
And facts on the ground, the real situation, capture that through data. And of course, you need all kinds of tools with that, will be the driver for change to show what is the impact. We see it with COVID. I mean, without data, we could never master this.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is now visible because everyone is affected. But the lesson from the COVID experience and importance in data is that data are even more used beyond the COVID without us knowing it.
Yeah, interesting. So you're saying, of course, obviously, young people are more, let's say, capable of using all those technologies and generate data. But you're saying maybe we should be more cautious or more aware of how to master the negative aspects of those data. Is that something that, let's say, governments or the senior, let's say, people should be, let's say, providing, because this is, you mentioned this kind of risk almost.
There's a huge risk.
Yeah.
I mean, you can even make a parallel with the colonization of Africa. Now is the data colonization of Africa and other areas.
Yeah, you mentioned that before. Maybe it's good to give the example a bit more depth. Could you explain about data colonization with in Africa, for instance?
I mean, what now is happening? You know, the Facebooks, the Amazon, they all blow satellites in the sky to do the surveillance. If you imagine that Facebook recently, last year or the year before, mapped every single house in Africa. You know, part of these data sets, by the way, are being available to humanitarian NGOs. But why they are doing that? That's their new market. They know every household. They start building databases of every individual. Not only, we know that they would do it from us, but they do it also in Africa. And those data and the knowledge about these data, they are of the benefits of a couple of shareholders in Silicon Valley. Or in China.
So would you say this should be forbidden, or should you say this should be regulated? What
it needs to, you cannot forbid it, but the discussion of breaking up these giants is definitely one. The EU regulation with the GDPR is a very important one. But this knowledge and this support needs to be also at the level of local governments. In many a country, we all know Cambridge Analytica and Brexit, and but do we know also the influence of the election in Togo and in Uganda and Guinea-Bissau? Yeah. It's happening.
Yeah, that's also what you said earlier, and that's also what I read and recognize. Maybe not the extent of the risk that you mentioned. So is there, because there's a kind of political angle in this discussion?
It's frightening, and it's definitely a political angle.
So do you see that the governments or politicians should maybe be more aware of these risks, or?
I think they're becoming more and more aware. If you look at the recent, can give you the title later on the recent reports of the World Bank on data for development and many organizations about the the opportunities, but also the challenges, the risk of the data. It's that is coming there. So for us, data for development is a key positive aspect.
Yeah.
But it has definitely the colonization part, the dependency on data is a huge risk. And I think young people are well placed to, you know, to realize that and to do something about it.
Yeah, no, interesting. And well, time limits us to go deeper into the subject, but it's interesting to have this insight from you. Actually, we come to the end of this interview, Jeroen, and maybe this is a nice bridge, providing maybe to our listeners some additional follow-up reference or book or TED Talk. Could you mention maybe one or two books that you would say this is inspiring for people to read or to see following this interview?
A tough one and a must read for young professionals is The Age of Surveillance Capitalism of Susanna Zuboff. Maybe some of you know them. There are also nice videos and documentaries on the VPRO and other areas online. You can and that is something that you need to know.
But it's a tough one, you said.
It's a classical. It will become a classical handbook on how our modern societies are under threat of a new form of capitalism, which she calls data surveillance capitalism.
Yeah, okay.
We are the new gold mines.
Yeah,
because
that's
we provide data instead of gold.
Okay,
and
interesting.
The second one.
Yeah.
That is, I came across it recently, and that is a book named What is Water? And I liked it because the author is describing how to cope with a world, as he described, as volatile, uncertain, complex, ambiguous often. And it gives some very concrete
tools
to cope with that. And interesting questions that make you think.
Yeah, we've come to the end of this interview, Jeroen. Thank you very much for all your lessons and your stories and your experiences. This was Kopcast, the YEP podcast on personal growth and leadership. And today we spoke with Jeroen van der Somme. Thank you for listening. If you're interested in learning more about developing the capacities of international young experts, please take a look at the YEP website at www.yepprograms.com.